Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where Dr. Janine Krause, that's me, gives you, a health junkie, a weekly dose of tools to help you increase your energy and resilience to life stressors.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. And on today's episode, I'm talking with Dr. Lisa Nesneski. And we're going to be talking about mindfulness, something that has been huge in my life lately. And I'm hoping it's going to be part of yours after listening to this podcast. So Lisa is a mindfulness meditation teacher. She's a board certified pharmacotherapist, professional healthcare consultant, botanical medicine specialist. I love that. Reiki master, intuitive author, and speaker. And today we're going to be talking about her book, Seven Mindful Questions. She also has another book called Grounded in Chaos. So if you like this one, you can go for the other one as well. And just like me, she has some serious life things that have happened that brought her to where she is today. And she's sharing what she learned from her experiences. And so today is going to be talking about the book. We're going to be talking about how using mindfulness to be present in the moment is the key to not missing out on your life. So Dr. Nesneski, or Lisa, whatever you prefer to be called by, let me know. Welcome to the Health Fix.
Thanks so much, Janine. And yes, you can call me Lisa, no problem. Yes. So, you know, as a health professional, you know, you think I'd know better to monitor my own body and symptoms. I have an autoimmune illness as well. So I found myself with this crushing chest pain. And I'm sort of like, well, maybe it's just muscular. And I'm, you know, kind of shaking it off and took a few tablets, you know, medications to see if it would kind of ease, and it wouldn't. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I thought, this is getting worse. Wow. So I went to the emergency room. And it was intermittent pain. It wasn't continuous. It would, and it wasn't anginal pain either. It wasn't the squeezing of the actual heart. It was just, it was centered in the center of my chest, and it would squeeze really tightly, and my heart rate would start to drop. So, you know, I'm hooked up to all the monitors, and as people are watching the monitors, they're looking for the EKG, they're looking for oxygen saturation. Nobody's watching the pulse, right? I'm watching the pulse. I'm laying there watching, fully appreciating that every time my heart squeezes and I get this pain, that my heart is dropping. And it went, my normal heart rate's in the 50s.
Wow.
And has been for years. So it dropped down into, you know, the 40s. And I'm thinking, okay, this is interesting. And I'm watching it drop, you know, 38, 36, 34, 30, then I'm starting to get scared, right? Because it just keeps going down. So it finally bottomed out at 28, and I took a nice deep breath in, and I blew it out. And it seemed like it sort of broke the episode, if you will. But meanwhile, as I'm lying there, I'm saying, watch the monitor. It took them a second to realize it was my heart rate that was so low. And, you know, I'm looking over my significant other saying, this is it. I could miss my life. I don't want to miss my life. Mm-hmm. And that's when things started to change for me. It was like, yeah, this is way out of balance. This, you know, this was stress. I had 5 departments in a hospital that I was in charge of, and 275 employees. I was driving 120 miles back and forth to work every day. So it was just an incredibly stressful time in my life. And I made changes. I started asking myself, I questioned everything in my life, and I started to make changes. So yeah, so that's how I ended up from Pittsburgh to Florida.
Hey, you know, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. And I think this is something that, you know, your story is not entirely uncommon. I mean, heart rate of 28, that's a new one for me, getting down that low. But for a lot of ladies in my practice, I've heard that, hey, my alarm went off on my Apple Watch saying my heart rate was going into the 30s. And this is something that I think a lot of us go, oh, the lower my heart rate goes, the more fit I must be. You know, I'm doing good in the gym. And yes, while it's true, a regular baseline heart rate being low is decent, but 28, that's not good. This is meaning that the body has pushed itself to the limits and gone too far. And your story with traveling to work and managing multiple, you know, departments, this is not uncommon for a lot of folks. There's a lot being juggled, jobs are cut. Now we end up, you know, taking over more, biting off more than we can necessarily chew. But I think with women, and correct me if I'm wrong here, we tend to think we have to be superhuman and we have to be superwoman and slowing down to take a break. Like, what? I don't have time for that. Only smokers take a break and they're lazy. And this is something that I find that, you know, and those of you who smoke, no disrespect, you're actually probably smart in the fact that you're using your smoking to take breaks. The rest of us haven't figured that out yet. Granted, you know, if we could ditch the smoking, get you healthier even more, hey, you know, I'm with you there. But I feel like it's a common thing. When you were going through all this, was that kind of the mindset? Like, no, I don't have time to take a break. No, that's not.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, in general, pharmacists don't like to take breaks. I had a revolt in my pharmacy department when I made them take a half hour for lunch. They were appalled that I would make them stop working. And that was a whole nother story. But the point I'm trying to make is it's somewhat cultural or conditioned that we continue to work and work and work and work. And I fell right into that trap. You know, I was the breadwinner for the family. If I wasn't working, nobody was eating. So, you know, there was a lot of pressure on me from that point of view. And, you know, there was financial challenge after financial challenge. I lost my house in Pittsburgh. It wasn't something I wanted to do. I lost it because, I was audited by the IRS, didn't know that was happening. The ex told me after I was called into the CFO's office and told, oh, your wages are garnished. So all of this is going on at the same time. And so, yes, not stopping and taking care of my body, feeling like I have to keep going, I have to keep this train on the track. If I don't keep the train on the track, then the train is going to derail and our lives are going to be, well, it didn't matter. The train derailed. And guess what? I'm on a better train right now, but it took getting to that point. And hopefully, you know, that's one of the reasons I wrote the book was that I don't want anybody else to have to go through that. If there's a way that we can begin to pay attention to what it is that we are doing and correct our actions in the moment to be more in line with what really matters to us, then, you know, maybe someone can really benefit from my story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's where we get lost along the way. And unfortunately, I wish a lot of this material was taught in grade school so that we had this foundation of awareness of things are going off the rails. What do I need to do? Kind of concept. And mindfulness in particular is one of the things that I think we lose first when we start to become really overwhelmed. We just can't see the forest for the trees. We can't even come in touch with ourselves. And I find that a lot of women in my practice who are overwhelmed, they're like, I can't really eat healthy. I can't do that. I'm too busy. So what was it that you started with first after being in the ER and going, I do not want to miss out on my life? What was the first thing you stepped into and looked at?
I think it was changing jobs. So I no longer have that position. I have a job where I can virtually work from anywhere. And that's kind of was the next step to really find some financial security that way and put that building block in place. And I've been with this company now for about 8 years. It's a big national corporation. And that comes with its own set of stressors, but I'm an individual contributor rather than a manager.
Interesting.
So I'm just basically in charge of me and my work rather than 275 people. So that relieving myself of the stress of managing people was the first step. And then I went through a series of doing all the right things with regard to my health, you know, doing all the testing and evaluating what's really going on here. And, you know, that's how I eventually found out it wasn't my heart. You know, I had all the cardiac workup and all of the other physical tests that I had done to go along with that, and made those adjustments to, I'm finding that a supplement plan works better for me than a medication plan. So, you know, switching myself off of medications. There's one ARB that is known to exacerbate celiac disease. Now I was on a cousin of that one, and I realized my gut is burning every time I take this. It's not supposed to be a class effect. You know, all the drugs in a certain class have a certain way that they act. It's supposed to be an individual drug, but clearly I was reacting to that drug. So, my point in bringing that up is that you need to really be paying attention to your own body and how your body reacts to various substances, whether it's a medication, a natural supplement, or even an essential oil, anything natural. Some people don't react well to tomatoes, which is a food. So, paying attention to yourself and how you're feeling, I think, was the next thing that I did after I, changed the job, do the medical workup, and then really start to pay attention to how I'm feeling in that moment. So, that's really where the questions came from, is paying attention.
Did you have any coaching? Did you have anything at all? Or was this just more intuitive to you at this moment in time?
Yeah. So, I've done a lot of self-development over the years, to say that I'm not standing on the shoulders of all the folks that came before me is not really true. But that being said, this is how I think. I think in questions. I'm always asking myself, what is it that you're doing, and why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. So that's the first two of the seven mindful questions. So, catching yourself doing something, and especially during that period in my life when everything was so stressful in the moment, that there are times, whether it's an illness or a divorce or a death in the family, where you just can't think straight. You're just so overwhelmed, and just asking one simple question: what am I doing right now? And why am I doing this? Like, what's the reason for this? And then, do I care about this? Does this match up with my own personal goals? Should I be doing this right now? Is this even the right thing to do? So not judgmentally. Of course, at first I was very hard on myself, and it took, years of mindfulness training and self-compassion to realize that that wasn't very helpful, and to, step back and just allow whatever it is to happen and look at it more or less dispassionately, saying, okay, this is how it is. The old, it is what it is. I mean, there really is some merit to that, is to look at whatever it is that's happening non-judgmentally and just kind of let it be and figure out, is this really the right thing to do at the moment? So that's sort of the underpinning. And I have a mnemonic that I use for the seven mindful questions. Yeah. It's ABC, pause and breathe, CBA. Pretty simple, right? Yeah. I'm aware because I care. A, B, C, I'm aware because I care, pause and breathe, choose a better alternative. So in a nutshell, it's a simple one sentence that gets you thinking as to get you right back on track.
So I have the whiteboard right here. So we pause, breathe, and then we have the C.
C, B, A. Yeah, exactly. Go,
coming yeah. up here for you, so you can see that there. I think that's huge. That kind of gets that. It's a pattern interrupt, because I think a lot of times if we have a lot of people are like, well, I need a mantra, and I'm like, well, this is like a great way to pull yourself out of that like downward spiral of life sucks, everything's terrible, I don't know what to do, and I find myself, even to this day, after having crashed my health pretty hard because of the stress and overwhelm, that I have to use some sort of mantra to be like, whoa, break, hold on, where are we going right now? I think it's you.
Yeah, exactly. And there is some medical science behind the pause and breathe. It generates your parasympathetic nervous system, your calming down system, to fire rather than being on that sympathetic adrenaline overload. So doing the, at least pausing and breathing, if you can't remember anything else, just pause and breathe. And that'll give you the space for both the parasympathetic to fire and you calm down, And when you're in a much more calm state, you can make a better decision. So moving forward, that's where choose a better alternative comes in.
Nice. I like it. One of the things I love to hear from you, because I hear this all the time, and myself included, it's something that, you know, I've had to practice over and over again, but I love to have other people tell me how long it took them to really be able to pause and breathe and practice that. Because a lot of patients of mine will be like, yeah, right, I've tried it, doesn't work. I'm like, okay, did you try it once? Like, you have to try it at least in my book, I had to try it at least 1,000 times before I actually paused and breathed.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, I've been meditating a long time in a different tradition, and I came to mindfulness sort of out of necessity. Like, I really needed to start paying attention to what was happening. So through the middle of a contentious divorce, one of my meditation teachers offered a 60-day, 5 minutes a day. And I thought, okay, I can commit to 5 minutes. And that's really where it started. And I've never stopped meditating twice a day since then. So, you know, you can start very simply with your first breath. When you have that breath where you're pausing and you're just paying attention to the sensation of the air going in through your nostrils, filling up your lungs, and then exiting your body, if that's all you can do, for 2 or 3 breaths, that's fine. Because you just want to, when you pull in that air and it inflates your lungs, that's when the parasympathetic nervous system fires. So with that first breath, you can start to appreciate mindfulness. So first of all, don't have the expectation that, you know, after a few breaths, you're going to be Zen. You're going to be up on a mountaintop relaxed, right? That's really not realistic. But if you go at meditation and mindfulness in that, you are going to have an experience where whatever that experience is the experience. So if it's where your mind is racing, that's okay. Your mind will eventually calm to the point where, oh, that's just a thought. You know, I mean, the thought of your mother is not your mother. So when a thought arises, it may not actually be the thing, you know, it's just a thought. So if you're labeling it as a thought, then it sort of takes that charge off of it. So labeling is another mindfulness technique that you can use during meditation to kind of bring you right back. There are basically 3 anchors that most people use when you're starting. So it's breath that we talked about. It's sensations in the body, like where your bottom hits the chair, or your feet are flat on the floor, or if you got a little something on your shoulder, you can adjust. Or it's ambient sounds. So it's breath, ambient sounds, or sensations in the body. Those are the 3 anchors that most people use. And you can switch them up and figure out which one works better for you on a particular day. You know, if your body is really sore or uncomfortable, don't use that one. Go use something else, you know? So there's options and there's no wrong way to do it. And I get a lot of questions about, am I doing this right? Well, sure you are. You're having your experience. So that's a little bit about mindfulness itself. The questions bring you into the moment when you're off the cushion so that you can begin to appreciate your life. You know, I used a term Augenblick to, it's a German word, searching for a word that meant in the present moment that was significant, and a significant event that could be life-changing. So I used that term to describe the latter third of my first book, Grounded in Chaos. And I, you know, after that event in the emergency room, that term Augenblick came to mind like, yeah, oh yeah, yeah, this was significant. It changed my life and it happened fleetingly and in a moment, which are all of that is the definition of Augenblick. So looking for moments of Augenblick that you can use to modify, make changes in your life and improve your life. You know, they can be negative things like, you know, heart rate's down in the 28, or they could be a beautiful sunrise, you know, something where you're like, wow, how could I possibly have missed this? You know, I just came to drag the trash can to the edge of the road, you know, and the sun is up. And how could I have missed this? You know, I was so task oriented in the moment that I completely lost myself. And so, you know, looking for those moments to be there for both yourself and for the person that you're dealing with, you know, people know when you're fully there.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. For sure. I mean, there's that connectedness that you can, I mean, the instant it's gone, you know, what's like off, but, oh, the talking about bringing out the trash is an interesting component because I think it goes so much back to the topic of missing out on your life. And you're so busy in your head thinking about either what's next, or you're thinking about your miserable life sucks, whatever downward spiral you may be on, or whatever forward spiral, as I call it, you may be on, you're not there in the moment. And I feel like for me personally, and I'll talk about myself only because I know myself most intricately, but I feel like I did miss out a lot on my life in the time frame where I was trying to push myself to the limits in my career, trying to help as many patients as possible. And I didn't, like, my husband's like, I don't think you even knew who I was in that moment, or even that I existed in that moment. And I can see that this is where relationships fall off the rails and things of that nature too. And communication falls off the rails too.
That's right. So learning mindfulness can definitely improve yourself to be a better version of yourself, to be there for those people and, you know, especially your significant people in your life.
So we've talked about how to jump into these 7 questions. What more do you got? Let's talk more about the book. What else is in there in terms of those questions? Because for me, I'm going, okay, I want to know, what else do you have?
So each question, I write in narrative verse. So the book begins with the story in the emergency room, and it's more or less a poem. And there are several poems throughout the book that illustrate the point that I'm trying to make. There are also meditations that you can download, and they're in my voice, or you can record them in your own voice and listen back. So there's 7 different meditations. That's a pharmacist thing. That you can download, listen to, and play at your leisure. There are exercises. There are 11 exercises in the book that you can work through each of the 11 exercises that goes with a particular question. And it takes you through the process of understanding what's important to you, what's your personal core foundation in areas like relationship, finance, home life, work life, spiritual life, and health. So all of those areas are included. So you really kind of think, okay, you know, really, what do I want out of life in these areas? You know, you can have different or other options to include in your personal core foundation. But the idea is that you begin to look at what it is that you're doing with the perspective of how does this impact my personal core foundation? Like, how does this impact my relationships? How does this impact, you know, being offered a job in another city, it takes you away from your family. Well, that's not an option. You know, so looking at how whatever the opportunities and alternatives are with regard to how does that impact all of these areas of your core foundation and what are you willing to live with? And then moving from your personal core, as you're looking at, okay, well, I'm doing this consistent with it or in alignment with it, then where have I made mistakes in the past where I could improve? You know, what are my patterns? Where do I do this stuff unconsciously because it's just a habit? Here's an as if. You know, we behave as if things are still the same way. And I found myself 6 months after separating from an ex-husband, meal planning as if he was going to eat this food. And I got really angry with myself, like, why are you behaving as if, you know, he's still here? And so I ended up making myself some meatloaf, which I liked and he didn't. So, I mean, it was one of those situations where it's like, wow, this is a little stupid thing, but it's significant because it was completely unconscious. And so that's how we go through life, as if things are still behaving the same that they were. And especially in this last year, nothing's the same. Nothing is the same. Everything's different. And there is no as if. It's all new and it's all different. And being able to at least know what your core foundation is, you can start to make choices that are better for you moving forward. So the technique has the exercises and the meditations, but more importantly, you can use it to plan your day. You can use it to plan the moment when you catch yourself doing something that you think, what is it that I'm doing? What do I need to do? And you can also use it longer range to think, all right, where do I really want to go? And where do I really want to make changes, and how can I get there? And, you know, when you go inside in that still small space inside, you get great advice from your own self. So, you know, there aren't always, you can take advice, but if it doesn't resonate with you internally, then you probably won't follow it. And I think you probably know that more than most, because when you give advice to a patient and they don't resonate with it, they won't follow your advice. So, you know, it's a cooperative relationship in a therapeutic situation where you're trying to figure out what it is that's going to really help them move forward. So, so hopefully this will help you in your practice as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the big things that you mentioned, you know, yes, for helping others, but just helping yourself. So many people come into my office and say, I don't know what to do. I don't know what I want in the future. I don't know, you know, there's a lot of the I don't know situation. And in my life, I've been in the I don't knows for, you know, on and off for many years. And I think for a lot of people, this is kind of the crux that creates the stress of, I don't know which direction I even want to go into. So how can I make a choice based on one direction or the other? And so this syndrome of I don't know is rampant. And if I'm also in I don't know, and then I'm trying to treat patients, yeah, now we have, I'm giving them options that maybe they're not resonating with, because I don't even resonate with certain things. You know, it's kind of that reflection on mm-hmm. things as well. And I think that's something that we overlook quite a bit. And I have to interrupt this 1 minute because I noticed that Rye ran down here and I have a low battery, and I'm going to have to grab my charger so that we don't stop the recording. So okay. I apologize. This is a good one for me. This is a new one. I'm going to pause us for a second. I'm going to run and go get my charger so we don't like stop out. And then I think we should keep talking about the book a little bit more, because I think this okay. is going to be fascinating for everyone.
I want to pick up on I don't know.
Yes, let's pick up on I don't know. All right, I'm pausing. All right, okay. I'll be right back. All right, so the world of I don't know has been my place where I've lived a long time, and I shared with you that I am now, I think I've come full circle in the I don't know, and I finally found what I want to do when I grow up. And so would you speak a little more, Lisa, on the I don't know syndromes? Because I think it's common for folks.
You know, the most interesting thing about you bringing up the concept of I don't know is that my last name, Nesneski, actually means I don't know.
Really?
It does. And I had a different last name for most of my adult life while I was married. And I went back to my maiden name, Nesneski, which originally was Neznioska, which I found through, you know, some research online. But it went back maybe six generations when some woman didn't know who the father was. And so they named the child, I don't know.
Wow.
So that's my Jon Snow story. So, I mean, obviously people who understand the language knew what it meant. It doesn't mean anything to anyone, but knowing that growing up, that, you know, some guy, you know, five generations ago was a bastard. Okay. So you're hung with this name that no one knows. And as I'm sitting in a meditation with Jack Kornfield, and he runs Spirit Rock Meditation Center, and among other things, he's an amazing person. He was a Buddhist monk. He said, you know, I once had a conference with one of my teachers. It was probably Ajahn Chah, who was his primary teacher. And he said, what if I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing? What if I don't know what I'm supposed to be thinking? And Ajahn Chah came back with, it's okay to not know. It's okay to not know. And in that moment, I accepted the I don't know as who I am, as it's okay to not know. And so, you know, I'm probably the only Lisa Nesneski in the entire world, because the name was Nesnioska, and I don't know if that any of the other relatives kept the name. It's really hard to track back that far. But, you know, knowing that you don't have to have all the answers is okay. And to just, what is it for me right now in this moment? What is it should I do right now? And that's okay. So that's sort of how I got to this I don't know thing, a resolution with it. And if you begin to listen to your heart, to really drop down, when you can just close your eyes and bring your attention down to your heart and just simply ask, what is it that I am to do right now? Your heart will give you an answer.
That's beautiful. I love it. I love it. And that is something that I think for a lot of people, it's a beautiful way to slow down. Mm-hmm. Getting there might be another story, but I think practicing, just listening to your heart, what is it that you want? I had to do that a lot in the last year. You know, what is it? What is it?
Yes, because when you ignore that, you eventually, you know, the emotion that generates sticks somewhere in your body and eventually puts you in the emergency room with a heart rate in the 20s. You know, that was my fault. I totally did not pay any attention to how anything made me feel. I was going to be that tough, you know, lady that was going to get out there and take on the world and, you know, health be damned, whatever. I'm going to be out there. I'm going to succeed in a way that wasn't very healthy. So, yeah.
That's huge. Yeah. I think a lot of people are in that case where I'm going to succeed no matter what it takes. And unfortunately, what it does take is our health. And in my office, I see various manifestations of where stress gets lodged in the body. For you, heart. For me, very, very similarly, heart, but anxiety, panic attacks, debilitating ones. Whereas for other folks, it may be chronic pain. You know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of different variations. I'm sure you've seen this in working with folks as well, especially as being a Reiki master.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And, you know, I've done a lot of different types of meditations that are healing meditations as well. That'll be something I'm going to offer to your listeners. I have some free meditations that I'm providing, but the healing meditations in particular get you back in touch with your body, get you really back in your body. You know, for many, many years, your intellect is what makes your living, right? As a pharmacist in particular, you know, your ability to think, reason, and do the right thing in the moment is valued, but everything else from the neck down, they don't care about. So, you know, paying attention to your body and being in your body while you're doing certain things, you will start to understand what it means for you to be healthy. That when you're paying attention to, oh, I really should go get something to eat right now. I can feel my blood sugar dropping. I'm making mistakes. That was the first time that I realized that I should eat on a regular basis, because I would start to make mistakes and my blood sugar would be low enough that I was making all kinds of frustrating mistakes. And then it's like, oh, the computer, oh, the mouse. No, it's the operator. So yeah. So staying in your body is really important as well, you know, because it's the vehicle that you're here with. You know, if you're in your head the whole time, you're missing out, like we said. Yeah.
Are any of the mindfulness questions surrounded around, did I eat? Did I take care of my needs?
No, but there is a poem in Grounded in Chaos where I looked at the dog and I thought, did I even feed her today? Mm-hmm. You know, you start to think you're so far not paying attention that the really important things are getting missed. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or did I even feed myself today? Like, oh, it's 3 o'clock. I haven't even had any food today. I mean, those right. Or water is another one. I haven't even had water today. Like, oh my gosh, what in the world? I could even get more. Did I poop today? You know, stuff like that. You don't even remember. You're like, I don't know. And this is, I mean, these are valid questions. And a lot of what, as a busy individual, you start to realize you forgot. You're like, oh my goodness.
Oh, absolutely. You know, did you brush your teeth? Did you shower? I mean, just some really basic things that, you know, setting yourself up in a routine allows you to really take better care of your body. You know, we only are given one body.
Yes, absolutely. And one life. And I think that's, you know, with missing out on things, you know, it's with myself, it's one thing, and with patients another. And I mean, that's why I do the podcast. I want folks to live their life so the fullest, but also have the awareness that there's much more out there than just, you know, supplements, medications, things of that nature to take care of yourself and get to the root of illness. Now let's talk a little bit about the book some more, just so that we can give folks a full rounded kind of idea of how to utilize the book, because it seems like this is a how-to, of course, to be more aware. If someone's sitting there and they're listening and they're like, okay, you know, I've read a lot of different self-help books. How do I make this book be the one that helps me to get to the next step? How would you say that this would be, what would be the best use of the book? Go chapter by chapter, or we'll go one chapter and master the art of the particular question?
You know, you can intuitively go to the question that you're drawn to first. Mm. That works, but it really was designed to be worked through in order from the first question through the last. Each question has a chapter, and it goes a little bit more into detail when, you know, when we're talking about awareness. There's a whole section on mindfulness in general, just what is mindfulness and how to experience that. And then the because, you know, I'm talking a lot about self-compassion, because, you know, when you find yourself doing something you shouldn't be doing, we tend to be very critical of ourselves, self-critical. So there's some techniques on being compassionate with yourself. And then care is where you're deciding what in your life do you want to include? What is your personal foundation? And then the pause and breathe is my favorite spot, where you just rest in the time, allowing that space for something better to come in. And you know, it flips the switch, parasympathetic to over sympathetic. Then the last three questions are very introspective, because we're asking you to choose what's essential. The next one, choose. And that's really what I feel is the emotional heart of the questions, because you're bouncing everything up against how you feel. So I'm bringing you back into your body with that question, so that, you know, a lot of this you can intellectually think of, but I want you to really feel into this. And then with better, it's where you're looking at your patterns and you're thinking, I can do better than this. I have made this same mistake 3 different times in 3 different situations. I'm done making this mistake, but it's not overnight. So we gently bring you along, so that as you are finding these patterns, you're aware of that pattern while it's happening, and you eventually don't repeat it. you know, but it doesn't happen overnight. So that's one of my favorite parts of the book is the chapter Better. And then we finish up with alternatives. And this is where I use an exercise to teach you how to use your intuition to make choices. So you drop down into your intuition. So with the exercises, they're designed to give you some really practical skills so that, you know, what makes it different is that once you've learned the seven questions, you can use them in a variety of situations. So it just allows you to self-monitor, self-adjust, and really improve yourself as a person.
That's huge. That's huge. And they're all right behind me. It's a little in reverse because of the Zoom here, but it's that's every single question, correct? Here, as we lay it all out, mm-hmm. Choose better alternatives. I like just thinking of choose better alternatives. Choose better alternatives is kind of like that might be my mantra. I've got the pause and breathe. I'm going, choose better alternatives.
Okay.
We've talked about the book. We've talked about the questions that are in it. And we talked a little bit about meditations. Now, of course, you've got a free gift for everybody who's listening today with the free meditations. And I'm thinking it's connected to your website. So tell folks how they can find you. Tell folks about the free meditations. Give us the scoop so how everyone can find out where they can see more about you. They can see more about, find the book. Get the book, and also where we can find those free meditations, because I think those are going to be lovely additions to everyone's repertoire and their toolbox, as I would say.
All right, great. Well, my website is www.lisanezneski.com. That's LISANEZNESKI.com. NEZNESKI.com. And I'll give you a link, Dr. Janine, for you to put in your show notes for everyone to get the meditations. Right now, there's 4 mindfulness meditations and 4 healing meditations. So they can sample both of those to see which ones really they'd like to try on. Now, these every week, I'm adding 2 more. Till the end of the year. Yeah. And if they sign up now, they get that particular for life. I'm probably going to have a membership site in 2022, but they'll have access to them forever. So, and as I said, I'm going to continue to add to them. I'm going to be teaching a masterclass on 7 mindful questions coming up in, the fall. That'll be on my website, and a 1-day full day workshop. I just sent the workbook on 7 mindful questions over to the editor. So there'll be a companion journal that'll go along with the book so that as people are doing the exercises, they can write right in the workbook. So I'm going to do a full day workshop on that too.
Very cool. And folks can work with you one-on-one as well, correct?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. I do medication and supplement integration, and I'll be teaching other classes as well. So yes, absolutely. There's a contact me form on my website if anyone is interested in more information.
I have a question. What does medication and supplement integration mean?
So, you know, there, I'm a firm believer in the wisdom of everything that's out there, that yeah. there are options all across the board. So to integrate them without drug interactions or supplement drug interactions.
Okay.
Choosing if a certain medication needs a nutrient, there are better supplements that you can use to replenish that nutrient, and then both work better. So that's a separate field of study that I've done for, gosh, 35 years, maybe. So a long time.
Well, that's really cool. And I was curious if that's what you were meaning there, because folks, like things like, for example, you're taking a statin medication. It goes nicely with coenzyme Q10.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yes. As an example.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And as much as I'd like the cardiologist to mention that to patients, I find that 9 times out of 10, we are missing that the heart muscle does become weak because of the statin medication. And we need the coenzyme Q10 to help that medication, you know, work well with your body. So this is fabulous, because there's a lot of information that I wish I had, but as a pharmacist, you guys just know. One of my closest friends here in Tacoma is a pharmacist. She's a compounding pharmacist. And so we talk about these things all the time. And so I was wondering if that's what you might have meant, because I think so many people really do want to know, okay, I'm on this med. What are the implications of this med long term? What supplement should I take to help my body deal better with this, because I can't get off of it? You know, XYZ, there's multiple reasons for these things. So that was what I was wondering, if that's what that meant. So thank you for clarifying that, because I think a lot of people will be like, oh yeah. And you're the expert in the pharmacy, you know, the pharmacokinetics and things of that nature, where folks like myself, naturopathic doctors, we know it, but not to the intricacy that a pharmacist is going to know. So that is like golden right there.
Thank you.
Will we be having a book on that at some point? Because I'm going, a quick reference could be kind of fun on that.
You know, that may be possible.
Yeah. I'll sign up for it. I'm putting my vote in the box for your next book as a as the medicine and supplement integration manual of some sort.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, there you have it, Lisa. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting all about your book. I think for the folks here on the podcast, we're all about mindfulness and really starting to figure out ourselves. And these 7 mindful questions, I think this is gold. So folks, head over to Lisa's website, lisanesneski.com, Nesneski, there, I said it right, .com. And check it out. I'll have everything in the podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. This is episode 249. Don't want to miss out on that. And of course, we're going to put the link to those meditations, the healing and the mindfulness meditations, so you guys can get everything out of this podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thanks for listening in. Have a great day, whatever you're doing.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Health Fix Podcast. This podcast was brought to you by Blue Blocks, the blue light blocking glasses. If you follow me on Instagram, you will see me wearing my computer glasses. Those are the Galaxy version. They're fabulous. I have not been having headaches in my office thanks to those awful, awful overhead lights that we have. Those buggers are blah. So anyway, blue light blocking glasses, game changers for your health. Check out them at blueblocks.com.